Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air. Once again, thank you for sharing your Sunday evening with me. I really do appreciate it. Today we're going to be discussing suspicious packages. And, you know, I have to tell you that this week has been quite an alarming week. But I am going to be discussing the suspicious package procedures, since that's been on the news. And coincidentally, I'm also going to be discussing church shootings. And third, I'm going to be talking about detecting and disrupting homegrown violent extremism, part one. And that's if we get to it. There's a lot to really talk about. I'm going to start off by discussing my emails, because the emails, believe it or not, coincidentally tied into so much that happened this week. I got one email at the end of the show last week that says, you've spoken on so many areas except church shootings. Could you do a segment on church shootings? Michelle from Tennessee. And now you know what happened the other day and this week. So that was coincidental. So, Michelle, yes, I am going to be talking about church shootings, and I'm going to tie it into what's happened in Pittsburgh as well, since that's one of the hot topics of the week. And then the second email is, Jim, with everything that happened this week with the suspicious packages that were delivered, could you talk about what we should do with the packages, you know, that may look strange? And that's from Pete from Sacramento. So all of these emails, it's really weird that it really tied in, although that one I'm sure was after the those incidents that took place. And then a third email asked me about the – so I'm going to be talking about that in a moment as well. And also in detail, the things to do, not to do, what to look out for, et cetera. And then the third one, the person sent in asking me, Jim, have you heard of the friendship bridge between Paraguay and Brazil? It has no security. And I was curious, does that impact us in terms of international terrorism? And that's signed by Joe, San Diego. Well, I will discuss that. And yes, I am very familiar with the Friendship Bridge. I was one of my areas that I did when I was on the intelligence team was to look at the Friendship Bridge, because there's no security down there and people can come across from, it's actually like a tri-border situation between Paraguay and Brazil, and even Argentina is down there. So, but there are other friendship bridges that I want to bring to your attention. There's one in China. There's one in Laos, as well as North Korea. So there's a number of friendship bridges around. But for those listeners who are listening in on this, the issue is because of the fact that these friendship bridges don't necessarily have security measures. That could be problematic. And I can tell you the one that you're inquiring about actually has to do with concerns with smugglers and also people coming across. Hezbollah is a group that's down in that area and down by the border. So it's down by a place called Ciudad, that's Ciudad del Este, D-E-L-E-S-T-E. And there are some major concerns there, because you'll have people that will be coming across. There's no security. And again, then they filter up through our southern borders, and that's always going to be a concern. I know there's a lot going on right now with the caravans. People are concerned whether or not there are people within that group that may be trying to come here under the guise of being a part of the caravan, about people trying to come here and make a living for themselves, etc. But there are people that possibly could be in that group that want to do us more harm than that. So that's why you keep hearing on the news about how these things have to be, these individuals have to be vetted properly and the rest of it. So, yes, there is a place called the Friendship Bridge, and yes, there are concerns about that as well. Okay, look, I'm going to be talking about Pittsburgh. There was a Kentucky shooting this week as well. I'm going to be talking about all of that, but I want to put a question out there, because this question has come up lately on the news because of these active shooter situations, and more specifically now because of the shooting that was in Pittsburgh. So the question I'm going to pose to my listeners, and, you know, please call in with your comments or, you know, any questions, is whether or not you think that the death penalty should be given to these active shooters, and especially in a scenario like yesterday where these people of faith were gunned down. Now, I'm assuming that all of the listeners have at least heard about this on the news. Some people, it was amazing. I did a seminar yesterday, and some people hadn't heard about it yet because they were in a seminar, the speech I gave yesterday. But it's really a shame when these things happen. I mean, obviously, you know, people go to practice their faith, and they're sitting in church, and now all of a sudden a situation happens where somebody comes in and just shoots people down. For those of you that did not hear about it, it was in Pittsburgh, and it was a synagogue. 11 people were killed and 6 wounded. And, you know, that's not your expectation when you go to church, but we keep saying the same thing, that you these days you have to be aware. And yesterday, for those of you who did not hear, just before 10 a.m., the shooter's name was Robert Bauer, and he entered the Tree of Life synagogue with an assault rifle and 3 handguns. Now, there were 3 separate congregations that were there conducting Sabbath services in different areas of the synagogue. Now, you know, he had to have been there beforehand is what I would suspect. I think even law enforcement might even be saying the same thing. But when he went in there, he was also spewing out anti-Semitic slurs and rhetoric on social media beforehand. And then he opens fires and kills 11 people. It's really one of the deadliest attacks on Jews in United States history. And, you know, from time to time, we do hear about these attacks on the synagogues and their places of not just worship, but on their schools, etc. And when these kind of things happen, the Jewish temples across the nation, of course, go on an immediate alert, which they have to do. And it's a shame that they have to do that. But it's been a part of their culture, you know, overseas as well, you know, sadly. But you don't really expect it so much here. But unfortunately, they have experienced these issues in the past. Now, this guy, Bowers, he traded gunfire with the police, and he was actually shot several times. And he's actually in fair condition at a hospital. And he's going to be charged with 29 federal counts, including hate crimes and weapons offenses. Now, I will also tell you, it's my understanding that he's never had a criminal record. So here we go, because people always talk about these assault rifles. So that brings up, obviously, once again, the debate about assault rifles. Well, he had handguns also. Now, they don't say which one he used to do the damage, but I would imagine that he used the assault rifle first because of the number of people that were slain. Now, the killings also, you know, are a situation where we begin with the national debate again. And that debate's always going to be there. It's sad but true. Now, the mass shootings raise immediate alarm throughout all the Jewish communities. We understand that. I was actually at a Jewish temple this past week, talking to them about a number of things. And, you know, they had security there. And it's unfortunate that they have to resort to that to protect their people, but it's real. And, you know, for those of you that have sat through my training or listened to the show before, I've said on numerous occasions that these days you just have to be aware, you've got to be on guard. I'm not talking about necessarily people being paranoid, but you just have to be aware. It's sad but true. You know, we have to be ready for these things. And I can tell you that when people go to worship or even go out for a nice evening at a restaurant, they're not totally expecting this kind of thing to happen at all. And for people to be brutally murdered by a gunman targeting them simply because of their faith, they need, in my opinion, they need to pay the ultimate price. Now, again, some may argue that the death penalty is inhumane. You know, we have the Eighth Amendment, you know, that's, you know, cruel and unusual punishment for those of you who do not know what the Eighth Amendment is. But it says cruel and unusual punishment. is a violation of the Constitution. Now, you know, as I told you, this guy had no criminal record, but he had literally spewed out anti-Semitic views even on his social media site. And the cover photo for his account featured a neo-Nazi sign. And his recent posts included a photo of a fiery oven like those used in Nazi concentration camps to cremate Jews during World War II. I mean, this guy had some serious issue. Now, there are those that would say that if you look at somebody like this, is this guy mentally ill? Well, I don't think you have to be mentally ill to hate. You know, and I'm not a psychologist, a psychiatrist, et cetera. And you look at these kind of things to say, well, somebody like this might be mentally ill. Look, this guy planned this out, you know, and, you know, you look at this and say, should he, in fact, pay the ultimate price? Now, my own personal beliefs about the Eighth Amendment are that I don't personally believe somebody should get the death penalty for a single killing. I'm not justifying anybody killing somebody, but there are people out there sometimes that can't control themselves for whatever reason, and they kill somebody, and it's a single killing. They made a bad mistake for whatever reason. Now, I don't think they should get the death penalty. I think they should go to jail, obviously, and possibly go to prison without the possibility of parole even, but that would be determined by the judge or the jury, whatever the case may be, based upon all the facts. But when you have people that engage in a behavior like this is so horrific. And whether or not he had a record or not, this was truly planned out. He intended to go in there. And what elevates this, in my opinion, is that, you know, the anti-Semitic part of this, the things that he said, the things on his social media websites, this is pure hate in the worst direction. And hate like this, he needs to be accountable, you know. So fortunately, he didn't get killed in this process. He did get shot. And I want to commend those police officers, by the way. I don't know if you know the whole story, but some of these police officers actually went, I think three or four got wounded out of the six I told you that were wounded. None of the police officers got killed. But, you know, they rushed into the situation to handle it. And it gives you an idea about what law enforcement are actually trying to do now. They're going to tackle this head on. Even if they have to take the hard hits themselves, they're seeking to protect the public the best way they can. And, you know, hats off to these individuals, and I hope they all recoup, you know, from their injuries. But they were out there doing their jobs, and I'm sure that that's going to be appreciated by that community, which is actually a very small community, I believe. It was outside of Pittsburgh, so not in Pittsburgh, I think. Now, again, that was a Tree of Life congregation or synagogue. So, you know, with that in mind, and again, anybody who wants to call in, 818-602-4929. And you can always email me, by the way, just as a reminder, listen up with JP at PontsandAssociates.com. Now, before this shooting, this individual, Bowers was his name, also wrote, you know, some things about the Jewish people being invaders, you know, and that they kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in. That's what he wrote on his social media right before he did that. So what does that tell you? Planned out, ready to go, etc. I see that I'm getting a call right now, so let me answer the call here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk
Hello?
Radio. Yes, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio.
Do you have Jim. Hi, this is Jim from New Jersey. Yeah, I want to answer your question about the death penalty. Isn't it true in the past, whenever the death penalty has been used, it's been used for premeditated murder? And I think with these hate crimes and these mass shootings, you can't find a better example of premeditated murder.
And I would agree. But let me just also tell you, Jim, and give you some clarification on what brings the death penalty. It's not just premeditated murder. And it depends what jurisdiction that you're in. You're in New Jersey, but I think this is pretty consistent because under California law, you can also get the death penalty when you engage in these high felony crimes. So like a robbery, as an example, somebody dies during the commission of an inherently dangerous felony. So that would include robbery, burglaries, like arson. Those are inherently dangerous felonies. So if a death occurs during that crime, then they can also get the death penalty. So it's not just for premeditated murder. Now, there was an example out here not too long ago at the shooting. Mm,
that's true. You're absolutely right. But what I meant to say was that in terms of murder, and premeditation is usually a determining factor, isn't it, in terms of in death penalty cases?
I fully agree with that. But see, with this,
and you can't find more premeditation than something like this, and the hate crime is a perfect example of premeditation.
I fully agree with you. And it does elevate it up so that it's what's happening is that this is not going to be in a state jurisdiction. So that's good. My understanding is that he's being charged at for 29 felony federal accounts, I believe it is. So that's going to take it into federal jurisdiction as opposed to local jurisdiction. So that's good because, you know, you have some states that don't have the death penalty. But on a federal level, it's a whole different ballgame. So he is somebody that, in fact, could – well, he's going to be charged, so he's going to be facing the death penalty for sure. Now, where that ends up, you know, taking place is a whole different issue because the feds can have the execution done any place, you know, under federal control. So what's your view on the death penalty, I guess, is the other thing.
Well, you know, in a case like that, I would say yes. The only problem with the death penalty in a case like this is that you get obviously this guy is like a white supremacist, whatever, in that same class of, you know, that group, that you're going to make a martyr out of him if you execute him. And that, if that's the case, you know, maybe it should be life without any possibility of parole.
You know, when you start talking about martyrdom, that's when a person, in my opinion, is part of a organized type of group. You know, this guy is just an individual lone wolf. And the way things are going nationally across this country with this, I don't think that it has anything to do with martyrdom, in my opinion. Now, I was also later on in the show, I was going to talk about the Charleston church shooting as an example. And there's another individual that was spewing out, you know, hate. Now,
were you going to mention the shooting in Kentucky as well?
Absolutely. That was one of the ones I was
going to talk about. Because, again, that obviously a white supremacist, he passed by a white guy. He said, white men don't kill whites don't kill whites, and he went and killed two black guys. Now, you know, maybe they're not part of any organized group, but the problem is people that think like them will look at them and say, right on, go, good for you, you know, that type of thing. So that's why I say, you know, to execute them, to make a martyr out of them.
Yeah, but
in the eyes of all the other people with the same you know, mentality. That's putting it kindly.
Right, but how do we deter the conduct? If they don't think that they're going to face the ultimate price, okay, and they are only going to go to jail, and look, in all honesty these days, these guys in prison have access to the internet. They got practice. They got so much availability to the public where they could possibly still keep spewing this stuff out. So you won't.
That's
be able
true
to,
too.
You won't be able to.
I hadn't thought about that.
Because of prison rights, these guys, some of them, I don't want to say they're all living the lap of, you know, of luxury, but because of prison rights and access to the internet, how do you think some of these guys are actually finding these women who actually want to marry them while they're in jail? Because they have access to this stuff. So I don't think that giving them, it's just my personal opinion, obviously, life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. What about the families? Now, look, some of these families, could, you know, they're God people, so they can actually feel that, hey, you know, go ahead, let's forgive them, you know, and the rest of it. But, you know, the message to me has to be a hard message that we're not going to put up with people that are just killing our citizens like this. Now, I mean,
absolutely.
You know, forget church. I mean, it's church. I get that. But we could look at that and say that's even worse, you know, because that's who we are. Now, I'll tell you, a few years back, you might have heard this on the news back there, that we had where people were brandishing weapons on the freeways out here. And it got really bad, people pointing guns, so that the California legislators actually turned around and came out with a law. Anybody that even brandishes a weapon –
on, you know, on the freeways was going to get mandatory jail time. I think it was 3 years or something. That stopped that. So you've got to be able to deter the conduct. And the death penalty, in my opinion, for people like this that spew this kind of hate with the attitude, anti-Semitic in this particular case, it could be anti-black, like the shooter in Kentucky, whatever the case may be. Those hate crime situations, those should be elevated up, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely! But don't you think? A lot of these guys, when they commit these crimes, they know that they could end up dead. They could end up in a shootout with police, and then maybe they won't care if they get killed.
Well, you know what? No offense. Let's comply with that, with their request. That's the way I look at it. This guy got shot. He was wounded, and they were able to take him. You know, so many of these people sometimes either end up taking their own lives. You can't find out exactly what they were all about, what they did, without a whole lot of research. This guy, it was easy because he had it all over his website, and so it was easy to figure out. But now they have him, they'll be able to discuss it with them a little bit more, find out.
Jim, this goes back to what you talked about a few weeks ago about seeing the signs and the red flags. This guy said all these red flags and nobody said anything?
Well, I'm actually going to be speaking about that a little bit later, about detecting and disrupting homegrown violent extremism. That's one of the things I'm talking about today as well. But you'll hear me in there talk about the fact about how law enforcement, they said, and you've heard me say this before because it sounds like you're a regular listener, that they can't do it all, but they are working very diligently. Look how they ended up catching the guy with the packages. They caught him due to excellent police work. They had him within what, 1 day, 3 days, 4 days? Within 4 days, they had this guy captured. So I think is what's going on now is that we are escalating. They're getting their act together about trying to get to some of these people. Now, this guy has something on a website, but you got to understand, he's still entitled to his personal opinion. So law enforcement can't always just rush in and say, did you put this on your website with all these anti-Semitic views? And because you did that, we're going to arrest you. You can't do it that way. It's like domestic violence. When I was working patrol, you go to these houses because you get the call. You go to the house. There's the woman, and she wants to tell you, my husband's threatening to kill me. Well, did he kill you? No. Well, I can't help you until, until something happens. And they look at you in tears and say, wait a minute. You mean to tell me you're not going to be able to help me until he actually physically does something to me? It can't just be a threat. And the answer to that is, unfortunately, it is yes. Now, they're trying to change a lot of that, but those are what sometimes the unfortunate realities of some of this, because if we jumped a gun on a guy like this and now he gets arrested before he can do anything, well, they got to have probable cause to arrest him and him giving
his... Well, I'm not saying arrest. I say keep him on the radar, keep an eye on him. I mean, 10 years ago, I might have agreed with you 100% and said, well, yeah, you have a right to say that. But we live in an environment today where this violence is becoming commonplace. And when somebody sends out all those red flags, this guy is a serious person who might commit a hate crime. Can keep an eye on him?
First of all, how many people like that are out there in this country at this point, Jim?
Too many.
Exactly. And how do you think law enforcement is going to be able to keep an eye on all these people?
Yeah, that's true.
That's the problem. Look at all the different law enforcement agencies that we have, and it's still not enough. So how are we going to be able to assign people to every threat that might be out there? That's the problem. Can't do it.
Got to be a solution somewhere, Jim. They got to come up with some kind of solution for this. Can't keep this up. Every time you turn around, there's a mass shooting.
But Jim, that's why, in my opinion, we need to awaken the public, for the public to also be able to assist and put the security measures in place. Homeland Security had been out to the synagogue and talked to them about some things to make sure that they were creating a safe environment for themselves, as safe as possible, and gave them some recommendations. But again, people never think that it can happen to me. That's part of the problem. And we have to be on the alert. Like I said, this week, I was at a synagogue this week in Los Angeles, and they had armed guards. They're ready. When they have services, they have armed guards. And that's before this incident. You have to prepare for this stuff and don't take it for granted. and again thinking it can't happen to us. You know, we need to fight back. The Charleston shooter, and I'm going to be speaking about that a little bit later, but and even in that scenario, it was another church shooting, and a citizen heard the shots. He grabs his rifle, goes out there, shoots the guy, wounds the guy, and the guy ends up speeding off. And then some other guy pulled up in a truck and they basically chased the guy down. You know, it has to be that we're not going to be able to tell in advance about these kind of things. And the public has got to chip in, okay, be observant, see things going on, hear things. And this guy had it on his website, on I forget what it's called now, where he had on there, I think it was called Gab.
Gab? Yeah. Gab.com?
Yeah, he had it on Gab.com. So I don't know how many people he reached out to, but there's a situation where somebody could have, hey, this guy's putting this stuff out. Now, he never said anything about him killing people until, you know, that day when he decided to go into the synagogue and he puts out on there, I'm going in. You know, I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. You know, screw your optics. I'm going in. Now, if he says that and he gets in his car and drives over there, there's still not enough time to stop him. Now, if somebody reported his website and now somebody was viewing it, but who's going to sit down there and view somebody's website all day waiting for them to see when they're going to give the sign that they're going in? It just can't be done. It can't be done. All right, Jim. Well, look, I appreciate you calling in, giving your opinion. I'll clear the line in case anybody else wants to call in. But I certainly
okay. Thanks, Jim. I've listened to you since you started in June, and you do a great job of giving out great information to the public.
Well, Jim, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care, Jim.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. It's always good to get the callers in, and Jim, you know, I appreciate you being a loyal listener here. But it's true. These kind of things are emotional about how these things should be handled. Now, I did tell Jim that I was actually getting ready to talk about the Kentucky shooter as well, and he's right. The Kentucky shooter, and all this happened in the same week. You know, sad but true. And, you know, he survived the shooting on Wednesday, and he was at a Kentucky supermarket. Now, again, this is a supermarket. So he's at the supermarket, and you know, he shot one individual named Ed. I just put his first name on there, named Ed, who was, he's outside. Excuse me, he didn't shoot Ed. Ed was outside waiting for his wife, and he heard the gunshot. So he's hunkered down by his car, basically, and was outside of a Kroger in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. Now, again, Jeffersontown, Kentucky, small town USA. It doesn't matter where these things are. Now, he heard the gunshots coming from inside his store, so he was crouched by the side of his vehicle. Now, he had a gun, so he was clutching his gun when this individual that was doing the shooting came by, and they had a brief exchange. The shooter's name was Bush. And he said, and Bush looks at this gentleman, Ed, and says, "Don't shoot me, I won't shoot you." And he said, quite frankly, the shooter told him, "Whites don't shoot whites," which is what Jim just alluded to a moment ago. And, you know, that once again, who he shot was two African-American people. And the guy was clearly a racist, and this was clearly a hate crime. So the victims, both African-American, one was, was named Maurice Stallard. He was 69 years old. He was shopping with his grandson. Minded his own business with his grandson. And the second one was Vicki Lee Jones, a 67-year-old woman who recently moved to Jeffersontown. And she moved there. You want to know why she moved there? Because she thought it was safe. And now she loses her life there. Sad. After he shoots him, he reholstered his weapon and literally walked out of the store. And when he walked out of the store, that's when he saw Jones and then shot Jones dead as well. Now, he's in jail, and they got a $5 million bond on him, but he faces 2 counts of murder and 10 counts of wanton endangerment. Now, this individual is different from the shooter at the synagogue. This guy has a long criminal history, including a protective order taken out against him by his ex-wife and charges of second and fourth degree assault, menacing, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, terroristic threatening, and intimidating a witness. So in his particular case, they say he has mental illness. Now, he's got a long history. So here we go again. So if he's got a long history of all of these things, we have to wonder, where did he get his weapons from? Look, this is Kentucky. It was a pistol. It was not an automatic rifle or semi-automatic rifle, an AR. It's not what it was. So, you know, the argument, you know, again, with gun control, you have to wonder how, in fact, he even had a handgun. Now, if he had all of these issues with the law, why did he even have a handgun? And that's the part that I think that, needs to be addressed, because he shouldn't have had it. And without that, he couldn't have done anything. But again, this is Kentucky. I'm not saying anything about Kentuckians out there. I don't know what Kentucky's rules are regarding somebody getting a handgun. And he had a protective order out by his ex-wife. Where did he even get a handgun from? Who knows? But it goes back to saying that you cannot protect everybody with this handgun situation, quite frankly, because of the fact that they can still buy them. You can buy, people sell illegal handguns all the time, family to family, friends to friends, all of those different things. So it's too difficult to try to stay on top of that like that. It really honestly is. Now, the other church shooting that I want to tell you about before I get into the Charleston shooting, because, again, it was my intention to talk about church shootings this week, but I want to remind you about the Sutherland Springs, Texas, where the man with an assault rifle, he killed at least 26 people and wounded 20 others. And this was in a rural Texas church. So this is out there in the country, basically. 26 people and wounded 20. This is what we're talking about when we talk about a mass shooting of something that didn't make sense. Now, as I just told Jim, this situation was, these people had gathered near the First Baptist Church, you know, after this all happened. It doesn't just impact the victims and their families. It's the communities that get impacted by this as well. Now, he was dressed in black tactical gear, had a ballistic vest on, and he just drove up to the White Steeple First Baptist Church in Sutherland and just started firing inside. He kept shooting once he entered, killing or wounding victims ranging from the age of 5 years old. 5 years old. A life snuffed out. To 72 years old was the oldest person. 5 to 72. Now, he was later found dead. And even a pastor's 14-year-old daughter was killed. Sad. He was found dead because he took his own life after he fled the scene. Now, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, at that time said that they were dealing with the largest mass shooting in their state's history. And in his opinion, the tragedy, of course, was worsened by the fact that it occurred at a church, a place of worship. You know, churches are normally places where we say where they can go for sanctuary. The church is holy ground. You don't do these kind of things in churches. We don't think about those kind of things. And here, sad but true, it happened. Now, I guess my question would be, once again, to anybody, you know, out there, would this guy be deserving of the death penalty? I mean, he took his own life, he's gone, but suppose he had lived. How can we not take some kind of serious punitive action, so to speak, against somebody like this? The churches, shouldn't happen. Now, this is the one where I was telling the caller that was Jim a few minutes ago, where at least a local resident with a rifle, you know, he fired at the guy. And when he did that, the gunman dropped. He had a Ruger assault weapon, and he fled in his vehicle. And the neighbor jumped into a car, and he followed him. And, you know, and they gave chase to try and catch up with the guy. Well, when they finally caught up to the guy, I mean, they were going 95 miles an hour to catch this guy. And then finally, the shooter crashed a vehicle near the border of a neighboring county, and he was found dead. But when they found him, he had a lot of other weapons with him as well. Now, initially, they weren't sure if he died from gunshot wounds from the neighbor that was firing, or whether or not he took his own life. So that still, you know, I don't have the information to find out what the end result was. For me, the end result was that he was dead. No offense, but he probably needed to be. And I got to tell you honestly, this may be hardcore for some, but I can't see spending taxpayers' monies on these individuals. Now, Jim mentioned about the fact of possibly life in the prison, imprisonment without parole. But look, the other side of that, why do I want to spend my tax dollars for this guy to be in prison for the rest of his life, housing him, feeding him, and the rest of this? No, you do something like this, we got to be able to deter this kind of conduct. So to me, the Eighth Amendment is truly appropriate under those the death penalty is truly appropriate under those circumstances. I don't want to see these guys in jail for the rest of their lives. You know, if they took a human life, the only way to deter some of this conduct is to let people out there know that we're not going to put up with this kind of behavior. And as a result of that, we, in fact, are going to take the appropriate action. Period. So, at any rate, anybody that wants to call in, the number is 818-602-4929. Hey, by the way, before I forget, if you want to get on my blog or my email blast regarding the upcoming shows, I'll tell you what we normally do. For those that are already on the list, we actually send out days before the show what the topics are going to be in the upcoming week. So if you want to be able to get on that to see what the upcoming shows are or the blog that I write, all you got to do is pick up your cell phone and text to 22828. So that's 22828, and then enter. It's gonna prompt you to do that. POTS Associates, POTTS Associates, and that's with an S. And then it will ask you for your email, so that when you do that, you will automatically get the topics for the upcoming show. And again, I'll give that to you. So you pick up your phone and you text 22828, then enter POTS, POTTS Associates, all one word, and put your email in, and then you'll get the email blast that we send up notifying you as to what the topics will be on the upcoming show, and therefore you can prepare. Hopefully you'll always say, yep, I want to listen to that. It's a great topic. But at least you'll have a heads up what it's about. And if you want to form any questions beforehand, you can always email me again at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Now, the other church shooting that I had already planned on talking about was the Charleston shooting. Now, that shooting, you know, that was just a mass shooting that took place just to remind you, the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. Now, that was not a rural situation. I mean, that's in the city. And it took place on June 17th, 2015. And it was during a prayer service that nine people, including the senior pastor and State Senator Clemente Pinckney, they were killed by this gunman named Dylan Roof. He was a 21-year-old, and Jim was right on this when he mentioned it, a white supremacist. Three other victims survived. Now, the morning after the attack, the police, they arrested him. They got him. They got him in North Carolina, and he actually confessed to committing the shooting in the hopes of igniting a race war. Now, why do you want to ignite a race war? You got to be kidding me. There's enough issues going on right now with this struggle with minorities and, you know, everything that's going on. So you want to ignite a race war? That doesn't make sense. So one has to wonder whether or not, you know, maybe he has some mental issues. Now, it's what he did. He actually targeted one of the United States' oldest black churches. And it's been a site for community organization around civil rights. So this was kind of an historic church from that perspective. Now, fortunately, Roof was found competent to stand trial in federal court. See, here's what it is. If these kind of crimes, they go to a federal level because they're hate crimes. So I love it when it goes into federal court versus state court. And he went to trial finally in December of 2016. And he was actually convicted of 33 federal hate crime charges that stemmed from that shooting. Now, he faced a potential death sentence in that case. And then separately, he has been charged with 9 counts of murder in the state of California state courts. Now, that can be confusing. Understand there are federal crimes and there are state crimes. just because you get convicted on a straight federal crime, understand the state can still wait for you or also charge you with state crimes. So you can actually be convicted on a federal level and a state level, but it can't be for the same crime. So as an example, in his case, the hate crime portion can be handled in federal court. But the murders, because that's on a state level, can also be handled on a state level as opposed to the federal level. So they get you going and coming in those particular, you know, situations. Now, this guy, Roof, he espoused racial hatred in both a website manifesto that he published before the shooting and a journal written from jail afterwards. Photographs posted on the website show Roof posing with emblems associated with white supremacy and with photos of the Confederate battle flag. The shooting triggered, once again, the shootings triggered debate on this modern display of what's going on around these guns, the gun control issues. So after this, following the shooting, the South Carolina General Assembly voted to remove the flag from the state capitol grounds. And that was another big issue, you know, even before that, because as part of their heritage, they had up the Confederate flag. After the shooting, they took the flag down. Now, he was convicted of murder and hate crime charges in federal courts in December 2016, but on January 10th, he was sentenced to death. But think about what he was doing before that. And this goes back to what the last caller was saying, these guys are in jail, when I also say that even from jail, these guys can put stuff out there. This guy did that. You know, he wrote a journal, okay? After that, when he was in prison, awaiting trial, etc. So they still get to put stuff out there. We can't have that. We simply cannot have that. And you can't say shut them off from the world because prisoners have rights as well. So because prisoners have rights, you just can't take those rights away, depending on who the prisoner is. Now, during the hour before the attack, 13 people, including the shooter, participated in Bible study. Did you hear what I just said? 13 people before the shooter. The shooter was actually in Bible study with these individuals. How callous is this guy? Now, according to the accounts of the people who talked to the survivors, when the shooter walked into the church, he immediately asked for Pinckney, which I told you was the politician, and sat down next to him, initially listening to others during the study. Then he started to disagree when they began discussing scripture. Eventually, after waiting for the other participants to begin praying, he stood up and pulled a gun from his fanny pack, aiming it at an 87-year-old Susie Jackson. Jackson's nephew, 26 years old, tried to talk him down and asked him why he was attacking churchgoers. The shooter responded, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're taking over the country, and you have to go." When he expressed his intention to shoot everyone, Sanders, and that's the nephew, drove in front of Jackson and was shot first. The suspect then shot other victims, all while shouting racial epithets. He also reportedly said, "Y'all want something to pray about? I'll give you something to pray about." He reloaded his gun five times. Those situations, what I tell people in the trainings, that look, you get in an environment like that, I know it's tough, but you've got to do something to protect yourself. If he's reloading, why aren't we doing something in between those reloads? You got to do something. You got to take the moment to try to fight back during those times. He's got enough time to reload five times. That's the shame of it. But it's true. People didn't go to church loaded down with their own weapons. They're in church. That makes them helpless at that point. But you can pick up things, throw things, do whatever you have to do out there, people, to fight for your lives. And that truly is the bottom line. The dead, 6 women and 3 men, they were all Methodist African Americans, Eight died at the scene. The ninth, Daniel Simmons, died at the medical center. They were all killed by multiple gunshots fired at close range. Sad. Sad. Those are the church shootings, folks. I mean, it's sad enough as it is. We get it. But the death penalty, in my opinion, I would have absolutely no problem being the one to pull the switch. Oh, that's by electrocution. I guess they don't do that anymore. But I'd have no problem being the one that whatever. They argue about whether or not injection, lethal injection is the way to go. There's been so much debate on lethal injection, et cetera. I don't even think the Supreme Court wants to hear it anymore. You know, I think that the death penalty needs to be in place. I know there's people out there that would rather be forgiving and all of that. But the realities are we got to deter these people. This is something that's getting out of control. This isn't something that happens now once every 5 years or once every 10 years. This is happening all too frequent. And unless we turn around and do something about it, it's going to continue to be problematic. Now, look, let's talk about suspicious packages and envelopes, because that's important also. As you know, that was on the news all this week. And I'm really happy that the law enforcement really caught this individual so quickly. Now they're saying there might be some others as well, so we'll find out. But what do we look out for with this? Now, look, I'm going to give you some basics here. So if you see a suspicious package, whether, you know, again, these church settings, you know, your homes or at work, you know, wherever it may be, if you receive a suspicious letter or package and suspect the possibility of a letter bomb or anything like that, you contact the police department immediately. Do not handle or move the package or the letter, no matter how much it may have been handled before you became suspicious. The letter or package will be evaluated by the responding officer. And if necessary, a bomb disposal expert will be called in. Let them handle it. This could be people out there that are listening that work in these environments. They may work in the mailroom, depending on where you work. Any of those places. Now, if it's an envelope, I want you to look out for oil stains. It's kind of like, the reason why I say that is that the oil stain is from the sweating of plastic explosives. So plastic explosives will sweat. And that oil that comes out of that will then sweat into the outside of the package. And the letter or the package will be oil stained. So if you see oil stains, that is a factor. In terms of ink, watch out for particularly red ink and blue ink, because that may bleed, staining the envelope. So now you see things that are happening. Oil stains, you see inks that might be bleeding through to the outside package or envelope. Those are considerations. Or the use of extra sealing tape or string. So in other words, you look at this package, you think, why the hell did they put all of that tape on there? You know, all of that string on there. And then watch for an inner seal enclosure. Peculiar odor. If it smells funny to you, what's going on? Wire string or foil sticking out or attached. All right? Or the feeling of springiness in the sides, bottom or top. So when you squeeze it, it's kind of springy. All right? Now, I don't want you to go ahead and squeeze it like that and all of a sudden the thing explodes. So be careful with that. Okay? But you get the gist of what I'm saying. Now, the weight. Here you got this small package, but yet it's heavier than usual for its size. Or the weight is unevenly distributed, so one side is heavier than the other. Not to mention the fact, by the way, if you weren't even expecting a package, that should be the first thing. Where did this come from? So you look at the return address as well. It's heavier than usual for its class. For example, an airmail envelope weighing more than 2 ounces? Come on, that's going to seem just a little bit strange. Thickness? The address, no return address, it's hand-printed, all right? The title for the executive, if you're getting it at your business, is incorrect. It's poorly typed or handwritten. They also say look at the number of stamps. Sometimes the stamps are excessive postage for the piece. You got all these stamps on that because they want to make sure that it's properly delivered, and they weren't sure about the weight because they didn't weigh it at the post office. That's why. All right, so they put on a whole bunch of stamps because they don't want it returned back for not enough proper postage. And on that thickness, by the way, it's not uniform or with bulges. So medium-sized envelopes, the thickness of a small book and fairly rigid, that's going to tell you something. For large envelopes, bulkiness, an inch or more in thickness. Okay? So that at least gives you some of the things that you need to look out for with those packages. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. But let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. If you like what you heard, hey, spread the word. But until then, I want you to be aware, I want you to be vigilant, and I sure want you to be safe. Take care. See you next week.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.